Albers, who got three outs in the eighth, will start the ninth. No career saves, but I'd give it about an 8% chance he'll finish this game.
And you think he would have picked one up somewhere along the way. 437 games pitched in his career, 438 counting tonight.
One big score is gonna set us for life. In out like a dream, in out like a dream. This is the big one, you understand. I have a plan. I have a plan.
Good morning and welcome to episode 932 of Effectively Wild, the daily podcast from Baseball Prospectus, brought to you by the Play Index, baseballreference.com, and our supporters at Patreon. I'm Sam Miller, along with Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm still recovering from the drama Monday night, which we didn't get to talk about yesterday, but we came closer than we've come during the life of this podcast to an actual Matt Albers save. So it was a scary moment. My heart was in my throat.
Yeah, I think it's worth considering that there is no such thing as being close to a Matt Albers save, that this story has already been written, and all the false drama is designed to trick us into thinking that it might happen or might be about to happen, but of course the author of this drama knows the ending already, yeah. And Albers has, always has, and always will have pitched his, in some dimension, will have pitched his entire career without a save.
Yeah, I always feel bad when we launch right into Webb and Albers talk at the beginning of a podcast, because there's always someone who's new to the show and wondering why we lead off with Webb and Albers. And if you don't know, there's a long-running thing that we're watching about Webb and Albers having the most games finished in the majors without a save. And so Albers has finished 96 games and has not had a save. But on Monday night, he actually had a save opportunity, and we get a lot of false alarms. People will tweet at us and say, you know, it's an Albers save opportunity, or Webb is in with the save or something. And technically it is a save opportunity, but, you know, it's like the seventh inning or the eighth inning or something. And the point is that they never actually get to finish it. So they come in and then they get replaced by the guy who gets saves. But in this case, on Monday, the usuals were unavailable, and so Albers came in and got three outs in the eighth, and then they left him out there with a two-run lead over the Cubs, and so this really looked like it. If he could just get three outs before he allowed two runs, he could finally break this streak of no saves, and couldn't do it. Javi Baez doubled to lead off the inning, and then he stole third base, and then Dexter Fowler singled, and then Chris Bryant singled and got thrown out at second, so Albers was pulled in favor of the lefty Dan Jennings with a runner on third and one out, and that run scored, and the White Sox ended up winning in the bottom of the ninth, but by then it was too late.
Do you believe that Albers needed to go 1-2-3 to get that one? Do you think he would have been pulled regardless when the lefty came up if a runner had been on base?
Yeah, probably. He had already done the two-inning start over the weekend, yeah, when Sale didn't go, so Jersey Gate maybe made Albers a little bit gassed when he came in for this second inning for the second time in a few days. So
it seems clear to me that from the usage that this wasn't a situation where Robin Ventura went to him before the game, my guess, before the game and said, "You're my closer today. Be ready for a save." Because if that was the case, I don't think he would have brought him in the eighth. I think this was matchups that ended up putting him in a position where, with very little margin, he could have gotten the save. But I think even a single base runner would have brought the lefty in to close it off.
Yeah, and I was as anxious as I've been watching baseball probably since last summer when we were watching the Stompers every day to write the book. And I think I still haven't decided whether I'm rooting for him to get the save or not. And so I was anxious about both outcomes. Well, some part of me would have been sad if he'd gotten the save. Some part of me was sad that he didn't.
All right. So we do this thing in our house where we'll, like if I can't decide something, if I can't decide whether to do X or Y, I'll play rock, scissors, paper against my wife, where she, with no interest in this decision at all, will be one half, and I'll be the other half. And we use rock, scissors, paper to decide a lot of things where we are truly in disagreement. But this is a different thing where she is neutral, and it really doesn't even matter which which outcome I am, because I'm totally ambivalent, right? I'm conflicted. I can't decide. So one is assigned to me and one is assigned to her. And we go through the ritual of doing best 2 out of 3. And in doing it, it becomes clear to me which one I want, because I'm either happy or sad.
Yeah.
And like, it becomes a much more instinctual reaction to the possibilities. And so we don't even have to play out all three, because it quickly becomes clear to me. So you say that you're not sure what you want Albers to do, but when you were watching it, what were you rooting for?
I think I was rooting for him to do it. Again, it's a little different, because either outcome would have made me sad in some way, but I think I wanted to see him do it. He was so close. So you both agree that it's scissors, paper, and not paper, scissors, huh? Do you do rock, paper, scissors to decide which way it goes?
No, she asked me this actually the other day.
Maybe it's a regional difference. I've always been a paper, scissors.
I think it might be a generational difference, but I think I actually used to say rock. I think I was rock, paper, scissors all my life. And then at some point I started calling it Rochambeau. Uh-huh. And it's not as though I don't know if Rochambeau has anything to do with the weapons. Like, maybe it didn't used to be paper. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any connection, but it sounds like it sounds like an abbreviation, right? Like,
yes.
Like row, rock, sh. Yeah. So anyway, and so I think just going from Rochambeau to then back to calling it rock, scissors, paper.
Okay. Well, that explains that.
By the way, when we were talking about what Chris Sale's jersey cuttings will be remembered as, we were looking for historical analogs, and I decided that I think the historical analog that I like best is Dave Winfield throwing a baseball and killing a bird.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that I remember Dave Winfield killing a seagull pretty good. And if you ask me to talk about Dave Winfield, I know in a very general sense that he was good, but it's not like I could give you a number that represents Dave Winfield. It's not like I could tell you, like, oh yeah, Dave Winfield, the guy with the iconic 462 home runs or however many home runs he had. And I just know he's good, so he's good at baseball. I know that he was a 3-sport star as an amateur, and I know that he killed a bird.
And which of those is the most salient to you?
Well, the most specific is the killing of the bird.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's pretty much, unless Chris Sale manages to, if Chris Sale has like a, like if you ask me, for instance, about Ron Guidry, I would say, oh, well, Ron Guidry, 25-3. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I remember Ron Guidry going 25-3. So if Chris Sale had a season like that where I could attach myself to one single number, or if he wins 3 straight Cy Youngs or something like that, or if he has a bloody sock game. But otherwise, I think I'll just remember him generally being very good, and he cut up the jerseys. All right, that's it.
Okay.
On to the topic. The topic today is a little bit of a thought experiment. And so we talked a few weeks, maybe months ago, about the case for trading Mike Trout, even though it would be extremely painful and hard to do if you were the team that controlled Mike Trout. And the case is mainly that it seems to be the only way out of this for the Angels. They have no good short-term outlook. They have, some would say, the worst farm system in the prospect rankings era. And they have a fair amount of money tied up in a few veterans, and Trout being one of the good cases, but Albert Pujols being one of the bad cases. And so Pedro Mora on the Sports Writers Blues podcast has said, and then repeated at Andy's request, the sentiment that the Angels cannot be good while Mike Trout is with them, while he is under their team control. And that is not to say, he's not saying that Mike Trout is prohibitive, quite the opposite, but it is to Pedro's mind very unlikely that in the 4 years that they have him under team control that they will find a way to dig out of this terrible rut in any way other than trading Mike Trout.
Right.
That if they keep Trout and they keep on this trajectory, 4 years will not be sufficient time for them to reset the terrible state of their franchise. So that is what makes the case for trading Mike Trout. Now, the case for not trading Mike Trout, besides him being really good, is that you don't want to trade Mike Trout. Like we talk about, there are different ways to to measure success as a franchise. And one way of measuring success is having Mike Trout. And even better than having Mike Trout is having Mike Trout for a really long time, to the point where he is, you know, identified with your team. This guy might go down as one of the five greatest players of all time. And it's a lot better if you get him for, you know, something like his whole career. At the end of the day, I think that, you know, the Padres got a lot more out of having Tony Gwynn associated with them than, you know, the Mariners got from having A-Rod associated with them, or the Red Sox got from having Wade Boggs associated with them, or, you know, similar situations. And so if you can have a George Brett or a Cal Ripken or Tony Gwynn in your organization for all or nearly all of his career, it is decades of rewards for that and of just sort of enjoying that. Like there's a pride in having that kind of a player. And so if they, you know, Mike Trout's going to be a free agent in 4.5 years, but if they trade him now, it certainly keeps them from being able to sign him to another extension, for instance, or working out a deal with him or whatever the case may be. And so nobody wants, you know, I assume nobody wants to do that. And just finally,
it's early enough in his career that if they traded him now, he could very well be identified more closely with another franchise by
exactly.
the time he's finished.
Exactly. As A-Rod, I think, is probably more identified with the Yankees, and probably as Manny Ramirez is probably more identified with the Red Sox and, mm-hmm. and so on. So, and finally, the last thing is that it would really be a shame. We've talked about how, by various circumstances, the Angels have essentially wasted this incredible 4.5 years of Mike Trout performance. And it would really be just, I think, disheartening to trade him and to say that the Mike Trout era was a bona fide flop for the franchise, and to and I think it would be a lot more fun to have a chance to win with him. So this thought experiment goes like this. Is there a way that this trade deadline, the Angels could put themselves in a position where they could win with Mike Trout in 2020. All I'm asking for is 2020 without trading Mike Trout, 2020 being the last year of Trout's deal. So I want to look at the Angels roster and see how much you think they could get for the rest of their team if they consider trading everybody. And, you know, if you have Mike Trout and if you assume that Mike Trout is going to stay a 8-win player into his mid to late 20s, which I do, then you only have to get to a 500 team around him. You don't have to be the greatest team of all time. You just need to get to about 500 and then throw Mike Trout on top of it. So this is basically a math problem. Not a math problem, but this is going to be a tally. We're going to just see, okay, what do we think you could get for each player on this team, all right?
All right.
I'm just going to go down the list. And if you think hold on to them, then we'll add them to the 2020 roster if they're under team control. Otherwise, we're going to see what you get. All right, so catcher, Carlos Perez, age 25, 65 OPS plus, nothing, right? You get nothing. You trade Carlos Perez, you get nothing to add. All right.
Yeah, Carlos Perez was traded to the Angels recently for Hank Conger, right? That was, what, a year and a half ago or
yeah.
so? And there uh-huh. was another guy in the deal, so.
I think, that was the Tropeano deal, right?
They yes. got,
yeah,
yes,
so,
right.
Okay. All right, so then CJ Cron. Cron is 26. He is a poor fielding first baseman or a average hitting DH. He has turned out to be when he got drafted, it was like, wow, look, this guy looks exactly like Mark Trumbo. And he has turned out to be almost exactly like Mark Trumbo. He has got a .307 on base percentage and a .453 slug in his career. Trumbo's .304 and .471. They're very similar. They're low on base percentage power hitters who are negative assets anywhere you put them on the field and okay hitters for DHs. The Trumbo comparison sounds a lot better right now than it did a year ago when Trumbo was a you know non-tender guy. It was unclear how much you would pay him. This year he's obviously doing very well. So that, well, I was going to say that maybe that clouds your judgment or maybe that's informative. But if they traded CJ Cron, well, first off, do you trade CJ Cron? He will not be a free agent until after 2020. He'll have 2 years of service time after this year. So you can keep him on your 2020 roster. He will be 31 that year.
Mm-hmm.
30 that year. So trade or keep?
I'd say probably keep. I don't think you're going to get more for him than someone who might eventually turn into CJ Cron.
Well, so a good, maybe a maybe a comp for him also, if somebody who has been traded. Well, I guess Mark Trumbo was traded at around the same time in his career. And that was a weird trade because it didn't all make sense. But that was in the Tyler Skaggs, Adam Eaton three-way trade. You're not getting something like Skaggs or Eaton back for Crone, though, right? Even with 4 years of service time?
I don't think so. It's a lot of team control, but he's not that good.
He's been worth
one win above replacement in his career, which is, you know, about a full season and a half. And he's just, he has no defensive value, and he's like a slightly above average hitter, you know, maybe an average hitter for a first baseman DH type. So unless you think he's going to have a Trumbo type of breakout, then I don't think he's worth a whole lot.
Another comparison might be Chris Carter, who got traded at a similar stage in his career for Jed Lowry, which you wouldn't be trying to get Jed Lowry back, but you know, Jed Lowry as a, like, if you were trading Jed Lowry at this point, what would you get? Or at that point? Yeah, okay. So you're not getting much for him, but you're keeping him? You're keeping CJ Crone?
I think I'd keep him because, Carter was like a prospect too, and Crone wasn't really. So I don't know. I think probably keep him because you're just going to get, I mean, what are you going to get, a future reliever or something for CJ Crone?
I don't know. For the purposes of this, I'm trading almost everybody. So I am trading him. I am trading him. And a future reliever, I mean, he's got a broken hand right now, so he's going to miss the next month. So there's not a huge advantage to trading him to a contender right now, but I could see getting like a bottom of a team's top 10 prospect, at, like outfielder right now, like a team's number 7 prospect.
Okay, but what's the expectation for a bottom of a team's 10?
Well,
CJ Crone will be in 4 years?
Right now, the Angels do not have any team's top 7 prospect. There's nobody on their team who is a team's top 7 prospect. So I'm just building a farm system here.
Okay.
So I'm trading Crone, and I'm saying that I can get a average team's number 7 and number 25.
Okay.
All right? Arguing that?
I'm not strenuously arguing that.
All right. Next player. Johnny Giovitella, 28 years old, former friend of the podcast in a sense, will be a free agent before 2020. Do you get anything if you trade Johnny Giovitella right now? He is a second baseman who has about a 90 OPS plus as an Angel and 1.5 wins above replacement in 215 games.
Yeah, no. If he could play more positions, maybe someone would want him. But as it is,
well, you're definitely, yeah. But you're trading him. What do you get for him? Do you get a team's 30th best prospect? Do you get a team's 18th best prospect? How high are you? You're definitely trying to trade him for if you're building for 2020.
Yeah. Okay. I guess you can.
Do you get a team's international bonus slot?
I don't think you even get that.
All right.
So
how about 26? So you give me 26?
Okay, sure.
All right, a team's 26 best prospect.
I guess like just about any major leaguer who's under team control and is not expensive. You know, if he's good enough to be on someone's major league roster, then theoretically he's good enough that someone else would want him to the extent that they would give up someone who's almost certainly not going to contribute anything ever.
I'm bumping it to number 23, which is future backup catcher.
Okay. I mean, what did the Royals, for instance, had Johnny Giovitella forever?
Yeah, but
they traded him for Brian Broderick, who I don't know who Brian Broderick was.
Big difference, though.
He played for the Nationals for 11 games in 2011.
Yeah, Johnny Giovitella has, though, changed what you think of him in that time. Well, you liked him because he had good AAA stats, but the Royals were giving him 12 games a year for multiple years. He was considered a quad A flop. And he has been a major league regular for the last 2 years. He's been a major league regular. Not a great one, but a one-win player. He's a one-win player. I mean, one-win players are fine for the 23rd spot on your roster. And
sure. I think like everyone except the Royals would have thought he could be a one-win player. I don't know. Everyone on the internet certainly thought so. So anyway, okay. You get number 23.
All right. Okay. Let's see. Andrelton Simmons. Simmons is signed for 2020 through 2020. Yeah, through 2020. So you can have him. He will be 30 that year. I don't know how much you question his aging curve. He doesn't hit now, and he probably won't start hitting any more than he does. He's been very consistent, though, offensively and defensively. He remains a plus 20 shortstop, maybe a plus 25 shortstop. He remains the best, probably the best defensive player in baseball. I feel fairly confident that he still is that in 2020. So do you keep him, or do you, I mean, on you could say, well, great, I want that player on my team. Or you could say, wow, a team would probably give me a lot for 4 years of a 3 or 4 win player.
Yeah, well, we know almost exactly what a team would give up because a team just traded for him, and he has really been exactly the same player that he was before the trade. The only difference is now there's a half season less of team control left, and that's about the only difference. And of course, the Angels gave up useful players. They gave up Sean Newcomb, good prospect, and Eric Ibar, and you know, someone else.
So Newcomb is the average team's best prospect, and Ellis is probably the average team's maybe fifth or sixth. And then Ibar, I don't know if Ibar was value or salary dump. He came with cash.
It came with cash too, right? So I think you get roughly the same thing that you that they got for that the Braves got for him.
So for 2020, building around Mike Trout, do you rather have 30-year-old Anderson Simmons or the average team's first and sixth best prospects?
I'd take the prospects.
Okay, great. Next player. Yunel Escobar. Escobar it has a club option for next year. That option is for $7 million. He is currently hitting .326. He's got a 118 OPS plus over the last 2 years. He has a 116 OPS plus in full-time play. He is no longer, you know, a slick fielding shortstop or anything like that. He's actually probably a butcher at third base, according to a lot of metrics. But nonetheless, he hits. He's a probably two-win player, major league average player, getting paid to be about half of that. So assuming that this club option is not dependent on not being traded, I have no reason to think it is, you trade Yunel Escobar. What's Yunel Escobar bring back? A team would certainly want Yunel Escobar on their team right now, right? A contending team?
Yeah, he's a useful player.
Okay.
So he's another guy who, of course, just did get traded over the last offseason. So we know that he was traded for Trevor Gott, who is on the Angels right now and doing all right, and Michael Brady, who is a double-A pitcher. Seems like he has good numbers. So you get some useful stuff for Escobar. I guess you'd get a team's I'm kind of just picking things out of a hat here, but maybe you'd get a team's sixth best prospect.
Okay. Sixth and only sixth. Okay. Yeah, because it's a year and a half. I mean, I like that is definitely a trade we write up. We don't hold it for a roundup of moves. Like adding Yunel Escobar would be a trade that we would write up right now. Yes. So yeah, I think sixth is a good estimate. All right, then we got Cole Calhoun. So Calhoun is the second best Angel right now. He will be a free agent before 2020 unless he signs an extension between now and then. He will be 31 in the last year of his deal, so it's unclear whether he's a great extension candidate anyway. Calhoun has 3 years left of club control. He'll be a free agent before 2020. You keep him if you think that 2019 is a hedge year, maybe. But otherwise, he's basically a 3 or 4 win player. He's a fringe all-star. He's very underrated in that respect, but he's a fringe all-star, an excellent fielding right fielder, and you know, basically Yunel Escobar lately with the bat, and everybody likes him. He just plays the game the right way. So you would think that Calhoun, while not the kind of name that you can sell a lot of season tickets around, would be a player that would have a ton of trade value right now. Honestly, I'd rather have Calhoun. I don't know exactly what the contracts are like, but I would rather have Calhoun over the next 3 years than Chris Archer.
Okay.
And Chris Archer, the trade packages around him are huge.
Yes, right. Well, you would have said a bigger package for Archer 6 months ago, probably, right?
I would have. Yeah, but we're recording episode 932.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, people came into this season thinking Archer was maybe the best pitcher in the league.
Yeah.
So, Cole Calhoun.
Who has been traded? Who is a player who has had 10 wins of pre-free agency traded recently? Like, Matt, how about when Matt Garza got traded. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's like, I'm not sure that the whole league sees Calhoun as 10 wins over the next 3 years. But if he is, like, that's a guy you get three good prospects back for, right?
Yeah, probably. He's making $3.4 million this year, and he'll be making a lot more than that probably in the next couple of years. But still definitely a good value. So yeah, you get something good for him. Of course, you could also keep him and bank a 3 or 4 win player in 2020.
Yeah. Well, no, you can't. You don't get him in 2020.
Oh, that's right.
You get him in 2019.
You could keep him and assume that you re-sign him.
Yeah, you could keep him and assume you re-sign him, right? But I'm not doing that. Okay. So I'm trading him. I'm trying to think of a really good player comp for him who has been traded. And Simmons isn't a terrible one. They're totally different kinds of players. They have somewhat different contracts. But what about Justin Upton? Like, again, Upton feels different. But when Justin Upton was traded the first time to Atlanta, it was 3 years of club control before free agency. And he was basically a three win, you know, on average, a 3 or 4 win player.
Right. He had the 6-win season, but yeah, then he'd been, you know, worse than that. So
yeah, younger, seen as having more upside, more, I would say more trade value, but not super far off. So he was traded with Chris Johnson, so that complicates things, for Nick Ahmed, Randall Delgado, Brandon Drury, Martin Prado, complicates things, and Zeke Spreel. Unfortunately, Prado was a large part of that. I don't know. Let's just pick some numbers. Let's go, 2-6-9.
Okay.
2-6-9?
Yeah, sure. I mean, on some teams, a number two prospect is a very, very highly ranked prospect.
On the average team's prospect, number 50 overall.
Yeah, so number 50, and then like probably two people out of the top 100, but still pretty good.
I think you could probably, I kind of think you maybe even get more than that. But
all right, so we'll go with that.
All right, we are getting there. Albert Pujols. Not worth discussing, right?
Right.
Okay. And then the bench, holler if there's a name you want me to talk about. Otherwise, Gregorio Petit, Daniel Nava.
Talk about Jet Bandy, just because that's a great name.
Yeah.
I don't know anything other than that, though.
26-year-old catcher, having a very nice year in very limited playing time. He has 104 career plate appearances and has produced a win with a 127 OPS plus. Former 31st round pick who had a 725 OPS plus at altitude in the PCL before that, and seemed like an org soldier who's had a very good 100 plate appearances. He's also 26, so yeah. Unlikely you're getting much yet for him.
Right.
All right. Jeffrey Marte, Daniel Nava, Jet Bandy, Shane Robinson, Giovanni Soto, G-Man Choi, Cliff Pennington. Do you want to talk about G-Man Choi? No.
No.
Okay. Cliff Pennington, Craig Gentry, Todd Cunningham, Brendan Ryan, Caleb Cowart. All right. On to the pitchers, Jared Weaver. Would anybody give you a number 35 prospect for Jared Weaver right now? Nobody would take Jared Weaver's money. So yeah. I think that rules it out. All right. So Hector Santiago.
Yeah. Hector Santiago has been a subject of trade rumors recently.
Mm-hmm. He has. So he is signed for one more year after this. He's under team control for one more year after this. He's making $5 million this year. He's basically, consider him Yunel Escobar's contract status, more or less. Mm-hmm. And consider him Yunel Escobar, more or less.
Yeah.
I mean, basically the exact same war over the last couple years. Similar performance just as a pitcher from Escobar.
The Angels have received inquiries from a number of teams about left-hander Hector Santiago, and they're willing to listen to offers for him. But only if it would improve the team's roster right now or in the near future.
Well, that we are not bound.
We
are not
about 2020.
We're not bound by that.
No, we're not. Okay. So it doesn't say anything about what they're asking back, but we can go with the Escobar package.
Well, I think the Escobar package was a number 6 prospect. I think with a pitcher, especially with a pitcher heading into the postseason, where him simply demonstrating that he is healthy at this moment increases his trade value. And because no team is really going, boy, we can't go into the postseason with him as our third baseman. But a lot of teams are saying, there's no way we can go into the postseason with him as our third starter. I think that you get more for a pitcher at this time of year. So I'm going to bump him up from number 6 to number 6 and 12.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Matt Shoemaker. And this is actually what inspired...
This is the gold mine.
This is what inspired the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you really have to decide what you're doing with Matt Shoemaker. At this point in time, he has been the best pitcher in the AL for almost as long as Rich Hill has been the best pitcher in the AL. Yeah. He is 29 years old, so he's old. He doesn't come completely without a history of success. He was, what, Rookie of the Year runner-up, I think, a couple years ago. He is currently making the minimum. He will be a Super 2 this offseason, and he will not be a free agent until after 2020. So you can have 33-year-old Matt Shoemaker, or you can trade 4.5 years of Shoemaker, including this half year where he is, you know, if you believe in the hot hand for pitchers, one of the best pitchers in the league today, to a team that is going to be in the postseason not 2.5 months from now.
Yeah.
And I think that you could probably get a ton for that. Pedro did not. Pedro said that, like, when they were talking about who might be traded on Sports Writers Blues, he said of Shoemaker, if you could get a lot, he would be traded right now. Like there would be big offers coming in right now if the league believed in him. And so the league probably doesn't believe in him. I don't know if I mean, somebody's got to believe in him, right? 12 starts.
You would think so. Right.
It's 12 starts, 2.39 ERA, 93 strikeouts and 10 walks. And yeah, like I said, best pitcher in the American League over the last 2 months.
And it's not a total fluke. Like, you'll read scout quotes that say, oh, he's got the best splitter I've seen this year, that kind of thing. So,
exactly.
You know, who knows if he'll continue to have the best splitter everyone's seen, but right now he does. That backs up the stats. And yeah, 12 starts. So Rich Hill had 4 starts last year, and the A's gave him $6 million for 1 year. And of course, you would have given him several times more than that, I think, but evidently no other teams were. So if we assume that teams are conservative about this stuff, still, he's been doing this for 3 times as long as Hill did it last year. And he's younger than Hill and has had more recent success than Hill and maybe fewer injury problems than Hill. So I think you definitely get something good. And he's under team control for years. So there's at least the chance that you end up with the best pitcher in the league for the next 3 years. It's not likely, but it could happen. And there's a pretty good chance that you'll get that for the rest of this year in the playoffs, at least. So yeah, I think you get something pretty serious here.
So he is a lot older than the player I'm going to say, and he has not come with the prospect pedigree of the player I'm about to say. But he has similar contract status to a pitcher who was traded in 2011 from Oakland to Washington, Gio Gonzalez. And Gio Gonzalez at that point had a longer track record of people thinking he was great. But he also had a 105 career ERA plus. He was still quite wild. He did not have Cy Young votes to his name or anything like that at that point. And he brought back 4 of the Nationals' top 10. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that you're getting that for him because, you know, Gonzalez was really considered quite sexy and also was much younger. And so I'm not saying that. Just as a baseline, though, do you get 4 of the top 20 and 2 of the top 5?
Ooh, 2 of the top 5. Man, I mean, look what the Cubs just gave up for Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
For half a season and, you know, 30 innings or something.
Who would you rather, if you're not if you're the Cubs, because the Cubs have specific need, but if you're a general, generic playoff team, who would you rather have for the postseason, this year's postseason, Aroldis Chapman or Matt Shoemaker?
I think I'd rather have Shoemaker.
Yeah, I think I would too.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to
discuss the ways in which maybe the Cubs gave up more for Chapman than other teams would have, but still, yeah, I would rather have Shoemaker.
So now I'm wondering whether I'm low.
I don't think you're low.
I think
it's okay.
Let's say 2, 4, 12, 20.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. We've got the 3 Tommy John guys, Heaney, Richards, Tropiano, all young, all coming off, you know, Tommy John next year, none likely to contribute to a team's probably regular season, but Richards and Heaney both conceivably back and healthy by like August, September next year. So maybe to a playoff contender, they'd be ready to step in. And then, of course, under team control for some time after that. Richards will be a free agent after 2018. By the terms of this exercise, you have to trade him unless you just think that by waiting until he comes back and establishes himself as healthy, then you don't trade him yet. Yeah. And you wait. Or you extend him right now.
Richards hasn't ended up having it yet, right? He's still trying to rehab it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how that affects things, but
do you? I don't know how to handle any of these three guys. At this point, I'm keeping Heaney.
Okay.
So Heaney's going to be on my team, and I don't know how to deal with Richards. So let's just say we'll put Richards off in this abstract other category of trade him later.
Uh-huh.
And then Tropeano, it's too weird to trade Tropeano.
Yeah.
At this point.
As well, hang on to these guys.
All right, Tropeano is going to be under team control too. He won't even be in his last year of ARB. So those guys are the foundation of my rotation, Heaney and Tropeano. So keeping them. All right, Chacin, Tim Lincecum, pass, Fernando Salas. You maybe get a team's number 45 prospect for him.
Maybe.
All right. Houston Street.
Yeah, he's on the block, but of course he's having a terrible season.
He is having a terrible season, even worse than David Robertson. Wow. Goodness gracious. Is he just done? Is his career over?
I don't know.
He's signed for next year too, which would normally make him much more appealing, and in this case makes him less appealing because you don't have any idea. There's also a team option for 2018, which adds some upside for the team, but depending on how likely you think it is that you're going to cash that out. Could you, if they put Houston Street on waivers right now, how many teams would claim him?
The Giants' list of relief pitching targets includes Angels closer Houston Street, and Street has been rumored, been tied to other teams, so it seems as if maybe teams kind of want Houston Street a little bit, so...
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming the number of teams that would claim him on waivers is greater than one.
Yeah, I'll say half the teams.
Okay, so from there, what could you get from him, for him? Number nine? Could you get a number nine?
Okay.
You don't like it? You want to go 11?
I mean, I could see nine. He was a long established and successful closer until his last 20 innings, so sure, you can get nine.
All right. Joe Smith? Not having as bad a year as Houston Street. Contract expires this year. Not paid much at all. Pure rental. Right-handed specialist. Very, very good reliever for most of his career. Not as good the last 2 years. I would rather have him than Houston Street.
Yep, me too.
So let's say eight. He's an eight.
Okay.
All right. And that's... maybe it. I'm not
Cam Bedrosian?
I don't think I'm trading Cam Bedrosian. Okay. I think he's I guess I should. I mean, some team would pay me a lot more for, you know, their closer of the future over the next 4 years than it is worth for me to keep him until that fourth year. So maybe I would. I mean, I guess, yeah. Look, he's not Ken Giles, but the Ken Giles package is instructive. And he's probably 80% of Ken Giles at the same, more or less the same contract status as Ken Giles.
I mean, this year he has Ken Giles stats, but he was bad before that.
He was bad before that, and I think Ken Giles was better than his. The ERA is Ken Giles-esque.
Yeah.
But Ken Giles was like...
Yes.
Whoa.
Right.
All right, so let's call it 80% of Ken Giles' trade return. And that was... like, I mean, Velazquez was probably a... you know, he wasn't quite prospect eligible, but I don't know. Maybe call that good teams, maybe 2, 5, 8, and 20 or something like that. So let's call it 3, 5, 10, 25. All right.
I don't think he's 80% of Giles, but all right.
You know, okay. So then, all right, I'm going to drop the 5 down to an 8.
Okay.
I think you're right. I'm just going to take out the 8. So now it's a 3, a 10, and a 25. You're getting a top 100 prospect, a name in the system, and a live arm.
Okay. That
all right.
Still seems like a lot, but I don't know. Go ahead.
All right. You might be right. So that's it. I think we're done.
Did we skip Skaggs?
We did skip Skaggs. I don't know.
Skaggs just came back.
Okay. Give me a return on Skaggs.
So all we've seen of him is one start in which he went 7 innings and gave up no runs. So that was a good way to build up his trade value for this fire sale. and he was, you know, a below average pitcher before the injury, but seemed like he could be better than that, and he's still 25.
If I had to bet on what Tyler Skaggs is, it is an injury-prone league average lefty right now. So that's like bad Jamie Garcia.
Okay.
Maybe that's like Jorge De La Rosa, kind of. And no, he's worse. He's probably worse than the good version of De La Rosa. I don't know. What's his service time? It doesn't say on reference. It's hard to tell because of the... I guess it's pretty high, though, because he would have collected for all of last year.
Right.
He's probably closing in on 3 years. So he's probably either two as a super two or three. So you get probably, you know, 3 years of ARB, you know, around three ARB years of that.
Something. You get, I don't know, like a couple guys in the back half of the top 10.
You think so? Okay. I'll give you 9-10.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to tally this up. So you've got a team, right now you've got a team in 2020 that has Mike Trout.
Good start.
Andrew Heaney, Nick Tropeano, and a payroll, depending on what Heaney and Tropeano are getting as arbitration, a payroll of about $40 to $45 million.
Okay.
So you've got a lot of money to spend, even accounting for the you know, the various players that you're going to have to pay from this prospect list and so on. You've probably got around $120 million or $100 million to play with on free agency.
You've still got Pujols, right?
Oh, you do have Pujols.
Yeah, Pujols forever.
All right. So
Pujols in 2020 makes $29 million.
All right, so now you've got a payroll of $75 million. So you've got probably... not counting all your league minimum guys, you've got maybe 80 to 100 million to play with.
Okay.
Which is not bad. That's more than some teams get. All right. Mm-hmm. And you have got, I'm going to tally this up. All right. And you have added to your farm system an average team's second best, third best, fourth best, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 12th, 20th, 23rd, 25th, and 45th prospects. Now, on top of that, you've got your own system, which doesn't count for much. But right. you have managed to build a better than average top 10. I would imagine that the Angels' depth, once you get, you know, past the top 10, is probably not all that. Their bottom 190 are probably not all that different than the average team's 190. And so you've got, probably a well above average farm system. You've got five guys that would be an average team's fourth or best prospect. I think 14 guys that would be in an average team's top 10. And, you've cleared the decks for the 2018 free agency class. I think you could do this. I think it gets done if you have the tolerance for what it would entail.
The worst team ever for the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. Yeah. And I don't particularly like teams doing that. So I don't know if I'm encouraging this. But if the alternative is trading Mike Trout, then I guess you could argue that it's the noble way to do it.
So it is possible.
Yeah.
Right.
They've got some pieces if they want to play for 2020.
Do they have the guts? That's the only question.
We'll have to find out. We've laid it out for them.
If they don't follow this course,
the only thing to conclude, the only thing they conclude after this is that they don't have the guts. Not that Cam Bedrosian wouldn't really bring back 80% of Ken Giles, but that they don't have the guts.
Yeah. It's funny. Someone in the Facebook group, I think yesterday, was proposing a similar thought experiment. How much of the top 100 prospect list could the Cubs acquire right now if they wanted to? If they just wanted to get as many of the players on that list as they could using everything at their disposal? And probably like all of it. Based on this experiment where the Angels, who we think of as just having almost nothing other than Trout worth having or worth selling, and we've gone through it, and maybe there's enough to actually get the foundation of a pretty good team a few years down the road. So if you could do it with the Angels, you could do it with anyone.
Yeah. We are not assuming any of these guys, though, is a top 10 prospect.
No.
And really, other than, I think in the Andrelton Simmons deal, we gave Sean Newcomb credit for being the average team's best. that he might even be more of a two. But it's possible that nobody that we've hypothesized, or hypothetically, I should say, acquired, is even a top 30 prospect. Yeah, but there are five top 100 guys, roughly, four or five top 100 guys on here.
And a lot of depth. It's just quality over quantity mostly, but some of those guys will pan out.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's all, if you did this, there'd be all the other benefits of being bad.
Right, you know, good draft picks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Not encouraging it. I will not, I will say this, if they do this, I will shame them and I will root against them. However, I would also understand.
Yeah, you'd also be flattered that they took our suggestion. Okay, so that is it for today. You can support the podcast on Patreon by going to patreon.com/effectivelywild. Today's five listeners who have already pledged their support are Evan Cleave, Andrew Gross, Matt, Simon Pincus, and Thad Logan. Thank you. You can buy our book, The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, our wild experiment building a new kind of baseball team. Find out more about it at theonlyruleisithastowork.com. And please leave us a review on Amazon and Goodreads if you like it. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/effectivelywild. And you can rate and review and subscribe to Effectively Wild on iTunes. You can get the discounted price of $30 on a one-year subscription to the Play Index by going to baseballreference.com and using the coupon code BP when you sign up. I will have a new episode of the Ringer MLB show up tomorrow, and we will be back with another episode of Effectively Wild after that. We'll probably do an email show next time, so send us your emails at podcast@baseballperspectives.com or by messaging us through Patreon. Talk to you next time.